Now we're ready on 2009 CA 1017, People Against Goldsberry. You may begin arguing.
Good afternoon. May it please the court. Counsel Elizabeth McClintock representing Daniel Goldsberry, the defendant appellant in this matter. The essential issue in this case is whether a 35C motion that was filed before the trial court was sufficient to allege legal and factual justification to warrant a hearing on the matter. The trial court summarily denied the motion, indicating that it was too conclusory in nature. The appeal here followed. The motion alleged that Mr. Goldsberry's plea was not knowing and voluntarily entered into because the elements of knowingly were not sufficiently described to him. Additionally, the factual basis that was required by the trial court to be given in open court did not go into the essential elements of the offense that would have to be proven. There's an indication that the written plea agreement could have possibly waived the factual basis in this case. However, the trial court asked Mr. Goldsberry to provide a factual basis on the record when he accepted the plea. And in that factual basis, Mr. Goldsberry's statement of what transpired did not match the elements of the offense that needed to be proven in order for his plea to show that it was knowing and voluntarily entered into. Specifically, the element of whether or not any touching that transpired between the child and Mr. Goldsberry was done in a knowing manner for the purpose of sexual gratification or abuse. Mr. Goldsberry's statement to the court simply stated it was abuse. It was my understanding of what Mr. Goldsberry in a 35C motion would indicate is that he was told that any type of touching of the intimate parts would constitute abuse between a child and an adult, and therefore there is a question as to whether or not it was actually done for sexual gratification or abuse. Because the factual basis that was laid in the trial court did not sufficiently meet the elements, the plea was not knowingly and voluntarily entered into. Mr. Goldsberry's trial counsel as well did not make any indication as to whether or not he had gone over those elements in particularity with Mr. Goldsberry. Instead, when there was a question about whether or not certain elements of the charge were being admitted to by Mr. Goldsberry, the attorney simply jumped in and said, "We agree."
Well, if I could interrupt a moment.
Yes.
You would agree that the written plea agreement was sufficient, just if you read that by itself.
Parts of it, yes, except for the fact that there was no factual basis laid there in the written plea agreement. And there's no indication that Mr. Goldsberry, as a layperson, truly did understand what he was signing there.
The court did ask him that.
And he then gave a contradictory statement as to what was in the plea agreement. What he stated then on the record was not what was in the plea agreement. He did not make a factual basis that went with the elements of the crime charged.
The plea agreement waived a factual basis. Colorado, you can waive a factual basis, can't you?
Well, my understanding is that it stated something of the nature of if any further factual basis is needed, you waive that. I believe that's what the statement was. However, then when the trial court asked him to give a factual basis on the record, and he gave a contradictory factual basis as to what the charge required.
In the contradictory, he said, I touched my daughter's intimate parts and I had her touch mine. It was abuse. I don't see it's contradictory. Maybe you're saying it's not complete. He didn't go on and say it was abuse done for the purpose of gratification, of my own gratification.
Right.
But
and that's required by the statute.
But I don't see it's contradictory, though. I guess you're saying there's some contradiction. Where's the contradiction between the written plea agreement and the oral allocution?
Because there is no definition as to knowingly did it for sexual gratification or abuse. That's contradictory to then just simply saying it was abuse. He never stated that what I did was for the purpose of sexual gratification or abuse, and I did it in a knowing manner. However, he stated it was abuse. And my understanding was, and the reason why an evidentiary hearing was required in this matter is because he would like to let the court know, I was told any touching was amounted to abuse in this situation.
So let's walk through it piece by piece. He did tell, apart from the written plea agreement, in court, he told the court that he had touched his daughter's private parts and she had touched, and he had her touch him.
Yes.
And the court asked if he had done this knowingly. Mm-hmm. And he said yes. Mm-hmm. So this is not an inadvertent touching. He's admitted the touching. The issue that you're raising is, did he do this with the intention to gratify his sexual desires?
Right.
And you're saying that because the court never asked him that question, we don't have an adequate record, and now he wants to come in under 35C and say, well, that was not my intention.
Yes. And the fact of the matter is, if you state it just bluntly like that, that you've touched a child knowingly and the child has touched you knowingly, there are several situations between a parent and a child where you have touched their intimate parts or potentially they have touched yours. Parents and children shower together. Children have a natural curiosity if they see naked people. There are several contacts that can knowingly happen between a parent and a child that are not for the purpose of sexual gratification.
Let me back up to the question I asked. The written plea agreement did have all the elements. Is that not right?
Yes, it did.
And at the taking of the plea, at the providency hearing, the judge asked defendant, you signed the written plea agreement. Correct?
Correct, he did.
And you understood what is in that plea agreement?
Correct. And then he further questioned him about it.
And that's a knowing, intelligent, and voluntary basis?
In order for a Rule 11 advisement to be done correctly, you cannot just rely in a felony case upon the written plea agreement.
Well, that's why he asked him in open court.
Right. And then when he was provided information that did not match up with what was in the written plea agreement.
Well, I'm not sure I agree it doesn't match up. It may not have had everything that was in the written plea agreement, mm-hmm. but I don't think it's contradictory.
And I guess we have a point of disagreement on that then, because it seems to me that if someone says it was abuse and we have a particular element of a crime here that has to be proven or admitted to in open court in order for the plea to be knowing and voluntarily entered into, which is for the purpose of sexual gratification or abuse.
No, there's no indication, I'm sorry to interrupt, but there's no indication that somebody misadvised.
Except that Mr. Goldsberry is alleging that he was misadvised, and that was the whole purpose of the 35C, that he was not correctly advised by his attorney. That is the second element. Argument that was brought up in the 35C, that his attorney did not correctly advise him and provide him substandard representation.
It's ineffective assistance. So you're saying performed efficiently. Yes. In that allegation, is there an allegation that but for that incorrect or incomplete advice, I would not have pled guilty? I didn't see that. I'm not aware that that's in the 35C motion. Was that second allegation made?
I thought that was in there, but yeah, that is the main purpose of the 35C, was to say that no, he would not have entered his plea, and he would like to withdraw it. Yes.
And would have insisted instead on going to trial.
That is my understanding, yes.
And did he make any assertion in the 35C that the touching was innocent? That the touching, I mean, is he simply saying, this was ineffective. I didn't get the right advice. I would have pled not guilty had I been given the right advice. Or is he also saying, and by the way, this was a very normal, innocent touching because it was in the shower or whatever?
My understanding was that was the hope to raise at the evidentiary hearing in open court under oath, that he would make that assertion and state those facts to the trial court.
At the hearing, doesn't he have to make some averment of such facts?
I don't believe so. I think the fact that the transcripts were attached to the motion that clearly showed that it was not fully explained or delved into, I think would have been sufficient. In order to provide defendants meaningful post-conviction relief, the trial court actually has to hear what they have to say. And in this case, that was not done.
It might be true on your first prong. That's why I think you have two prongs. One is that you can tell from the transcript and the plea agreement as a whole that the advice was inadequate. And I think, I'm not sure I at least accept the argument that it's mm-hmm. contradictory somehow. You're saying that it was not as complete orally as it was done in writing. That's when you look at the papers. The second one, I think, ineffective assistance, normally I think you have to at least raise some, I would think, there was no affidavit by the defendant, was there?
No, there was not.
I mean, normally there'd have to be some threshold that had I been properly advised by competent counsel, I would have insisted on my innocence and gone to trial and maybe even include something that this was innocent touching. But you have to at least make a threshold showing of prejudice, I think, to get a hearing. Can't just not automatic in Colorado.
No, it's not automatic, but I thought that the allegations that were contained within the motion were sufficient in order to at least get a hearing on the matter. I do not believe that the statute requires you to state every factual basis or issue that could potentially be raised at an evidentiary hearing, because that's the purpose of the evidentiary hearing. This is a threshold matter to see whether or not you can get into court. And the purpose of putting in those thresholds is to make sure that pro se defendants that are sitting in prison and have nothing else to do are not constantly filing motions that have no merit. And I don't think that in this situation that was the case. Could it have been done better? Probably so, yes. But what did it meet the threshold requirement? Yes, it did. And an evidentiary hearing should have been held on the matter.
But what would you say to the proposition that a defendant must allege facts which, if true, would entitle him to relief?
I believe that with that requirement, that was met here. Yes, I do. If I could reserve any further time for rebuttal.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
May it please the court and counsel. Paul Kaler, 19210 for the people here. I guess there's three main points to our argument today. One, the defendant did not allege facts supporting the Hill versus Lockhart prejudice prong that he would have foregone the original 4-year deferred sentence that he received under the plea agreement, instead gone to trial and risked exposure under a sexual assault and child victim under 14 position of trust, which he got a very good deal on this. Secondly, the written plea agreement here, which the defendant said he had read and understood and discussed with his counsel, set forth all the elements of the offense, all the consequences of, or the important consequences of this plea, and that was sufficient to show that this was a fully knowing, voluntary, intelligent, guilty plea. And third, I admit I didn't write this in the brief, and I think it's actually been a long time since I even thought about the issue is concerning factual basis. I don't think a factual basis needs to track the elements in offense. I think the purpose of the factual basis is to make sure that the defendant knows to which acts the guilty plea is referring. It doesn't have to track down A, B, C, down the elements of the offense. Here, I think the factual basis, what he said was he was aware of the particular touching incident that this whole case was about. And I think
the argument is if he had not waived a factual basis, it might still be okay.
No, even if he had not waived it, the factual basis here would be fine.
It's a little closer.
I'm a little bit closer, but still, I don't think a factual basis needs to track the elements of the offense. It's just to make sure the defendant knows to which acts the case is concerning. And I think by what the defendant said here, factual basis, even if it had not been waived, would be sufficient. If there's anything else I could help the court with, I don't have much to say today.
Thank you, Mr. Kaler.
Your spirit of rebuttal, that was fairly short, so I don't know that I have any rebuttal, unless the court has any further questions.
Thank you, Ms. McClintock.
Great, thank you.
Thank you, counsel. The case is now submitted. An opinion will issue in due course. That completes this setting for Division 6, and Division 6 is adjourned until the next setting.